You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
I'm Maryam Alahi with the International Women's Program, and I'm thrilled to welcome you to this screening, which we are proud and honored to be holding today, together with Women Makes Movies. And I would like to very briefly introduce Deborah Zimmerman, the Executive Director of Women Make Movies, and we will then proceed to the screening and have our panel discussion afterwards. Deborah Zimmerman has been the Executive Director of Women Make Movies, a nonprofit feminist media organization, since 1983. During her tenure, the organization has grown into the largest distributor of films and videotapes by and about women around the world. Women Make Movies is known for discovering and distributing the films of new and innovative filmmakers, including Sally Potter, Jane Campion, Grinda Chadha, and Julie Dash. Ms. Zimmerman is in great demand as a lecturer on women's media, media distribution, and fundraising throughout the world, and has been a grants panelist for government and private foundations and served as a jury member for numerous festivals. It's a great honor to have her here with us today, co-sponsoring this event. And again, I would like to welcome you all and turn over the microphone to Deborah.
Hi. I so hate when my official bio is written, but it's my fault because I told Maryam she doesn't have to say a thing about me, because I'm really just absolutely completely thrilled to be here co-sponsoring this event with OSI in support of this absolutely incredible, amazing film, The Greatest Silence. For those of you who don't know, Lisa asked me not to say anything great about the film, but the film did win the special jury prize at the most recent Sundance Film Festival. It has been traveling around the world with Lisa on what she's called her her march of death. She's been in about, what is it? 6 countries in a month, to sold out audiences in Prague, in Ethiopia, in Rwanda, in London, in many, many different places. Lisa, I have to say, is one of those filmmakers that is just a complete and utter joy to work with. I told her I was going to tell you that she was the greatest thing since sliced bread, but she told me that sliced bread is only 4th on the list of really great things. Number 1 is frozen food. So. It's rare that there's a filmmaker that we encounter that is both a brilliant filmmaker and truly deeply committed, so committed to the subject of her film. You'll see the film in a minute, and I know that you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that the commitment is there. But the commitment hasn't stopped with the finishing of the film, because Lisa has not just been traveling over the last 6 weeks with the help of OSI. She's actually going to be traveling for the next 18 months. You say 6, I say 18, bringing the film to audiences around the world and really affecting change. Beyond the screenings that I mentioned, the film has also been seen by members of parliament in Britain, as well as in the US Congress, and other really important policymakers. She'll be in Brussels and Rome in the next month, also showing it to other policymakers. So without further ado, I'd like to proudly introduce Lisa Jackson.
Every time I stand in front of audiences, I just I think about the women who trusted me with their stories and how they would not believe the people who turn up to hear them, and I'm so grateful that you all are here. I'm grateful to Debbie and Women Make Movies. She's been a godmother to so many movies. She was an early, early supporter of this one and helped nurture and guide me and smack me around and keep me good, wipe up my tears. And also to OSI and the women's program here, who is going to help me take it forward. So without further ado, I really look forward to your comments and questions afterwards, and thanks for being here. So,
the women of the DRC are incredible. I just want to mention that about in January, there were a number of us colleagues who were in the DRC unknowingly following Lisa's footsteps and meeting some of the people that that you've seen in the film, in the documentary. You saw Majour Honorine. I mean, every town should have a Majour Honorine. She's just an incredible, incredible woman, and she was actually supposed to be joining us here on the panel this evening, but didn't get her visa in time. So that's unfortunate. And I think Lisa perfectly captures the spirit and the resilience of the Congolese women who are facing hell, and yet somehow are just so empowered and passionate about their fight for justice, for speaking the truth, are not intimidated by these horrors. And I'm convinced that if there's ever going to be permanent peace and some level of justice in the DRC, it will be because of and through the efforts of the women in the Congo. So let me introduce our panelists, and then I would like to sort of open the floor to questions from all of you. Of course, Lisa Jackson needs no introduction. It's really an honor to have her here with us today. Marie Mossi-Dokounou is a Congolese human rights activist and a jurist by profession, and she works for a number of human rights organizations, including the Association Africaine des Droits de l'Homme. Bernard Kalume was in the documentary, so you're a bit familiar with his background. He's from Bukavu himself, and he personally witnessed the killing of his own wife in Rwanda during the genocide, and has been very active on issues addressing sexual violence against women. And when he and Lisa met by chance, it was clear that they were going to work together and be partners on this important documentary. I would like to sort of open the floor up to questions and let all of you have an opportunity to ask your questions. But before that, let me ask our panelists if they would like to say a word to lead the discussion. It's up to you.
Bernard is seeing the film really for the first time tonight. He's seen various cuts, but I'd like to hear from him first.
That's true. This is the first time I see the movie myself. I'd never seen it before, and I'm really shaken. Lisa, thank you. My concern when I met Lisa was, you know, the title of the film, the movie, is The Greatest Silence. Everybody was keeping the whole story in silence. No one wanted to talk about it. And then, by chance, I met Lisa. Now, after seeing the movie, I can say, God, thank you. Now, you know what is going on in my country. And other people know what is going on, the truth. Thank you.
I want to speak in French. My English is not good. I don't know if someone can translate what I say. Je voudrais dire, au fait, je ne pouvais pas peut-être être ici, mais quand j'ai été contactée seulement hier et on m'a dit que si je pouvais venir intervenir ici par rapport à ces films, je me suis dit c'est une bonne chose, comme actuellement on commence à parler des violences sexuelles faites à la femme en RDC, il faudrait continuer à en parler pour mobiliser encore beaucoup plus la communauté internationale autour de cette question.
Sorry, I'm not so good in English, so if you are too long, I won't translate.
I can.
Maybe. Okay.
You can do it.
Can someone help us?
Maurice.
Sure.
To be easy.
Basically said that she was contacted at the very last minute and she was not sure if she was going to be able to make it, but thank God she was able to be here today. And The second part, you also said that it's important for people to know that all these atrocities are committed towards women in the Congo. It has to be known in the whole world, and she's very grateful for that.
Au fait, ce que je voudrais dire ici, parce que j'ai vu dans les films, on a beaucoup plus relevé le problème de violence sexuelle par les armées étrangères et aussi le groupe armé congolais. Et j'ai vu même la ministre de la Condition, l'ex-ministre de la Condition féminine et famille, qui fut elle-même aussi membre d'un groupe rebelle qui a eu à faire aussi des violences sexuelles, qui heureusement, pendant la transition, s'était mise ensemble dans le programme de l'initiative conjointe pour assister les victimes de violences sexuelles. Il y a un engagement actuellement du gouvernement, des ONG et aussi des agences des Nations Unies, bien sûr aussi avec les organisations internationales, pour essayer d'assister les victimes. Mais en tout cas, l'assistance aux victimes ne touche pas encore actuellement vraiment ces victimes-là.
What is important today to know is the fact that the more international organizations that will be involved in getting the message out, basically by breaking the silence, that's the most efficient way we can attack things there in order to solve all the problems, all the issues that are going on. If not, then things will keep on going worse and worse for women in the Congo.
Vous avez vu, il y a des milliers de victimes. Bien sûr, toutes ces victimes ont besoin d'une assistance. Il y a d'autres qui se limitent seulement à l'assistance psychosociale ou bien médicale. Mais le problème, je pense, tout le monde a insisté sur la lutte contre l'impunité. Parce que si les auteurs des violences sexuelles ou d'autres personnes se mettent aussi à violer les femmes, c'est parce que jusqu'aujourd'hui, bien sûr, il y a d'autres cas qui ont été poursuivis au niveau de la justice, mais il n'y a pas suivi. Donc, il n'y a pas vraiment un suivi continu des dossiers judiciaires.
What's happening in the Congo is that all these people who are committing these atrocities are not basically arrested. In other words, when the authorities are involved, there's no follow-up. And what she would like to do is to have more authorities taking things under control, because if they don't, then the same people will be committing the same atrocities over and over again.
Alors que nous avons déjà une loi de répression des violences sexuelles depuis 2006, il y a des cas des auteurs qui ont été identifiés parce qu'il y a d'autres. Vous avez vu même, on a interviewé quelques militaires, il y a des victimes qui ont identifié leurs auteurs et qui ont porté plainte, mais malheureusement au niveau de la justice, on les laisse partir.
Okay.
Et il sème encore l'insécurité dans la population.
Since 2006, they have basically recorded, gathered data of approximately 1,000 guilty people, and what has been happening since that time is that no follow-up has been done, and what she would like today is to have things pretty much brought into the hands of the government and the authorities and follow up on these people again and again. Yes, I mean 1,000 data and the law. Thank you for bringing that up.
Donc pour nous, nous disions qu'il faudrait qu'il y ait réellement la paix en RDC parce que toute cette insécurité, c'est parce qu'il y a aussi des zones, des conflits, comme vous le savez à l'Est, la guerre continue, quand il y a l'insécurité. Et quand le gouvernement ne joue pas son rôle de protection de la population, je pense qu'on va continuer à vivre ces violences sexuelles. Je pense que je pourrais me limiter là.
All right. Basically, she said all these atrocities that have been going on these past years, the government has to be involved again and again. And what was the last phrase?
Je disais que le gouvernement devrait aussi sécuriser la population.
Mm-hmm.
Il faudrait aider la RDC à vivre vraiment réellement la paix, donc mm-hmm. qu'il n'y ait plus de zones de conflit,
okay.
pour que les femmes se sentent sécurisées.
Okay, the government has to make sure that there's safety, security, a sort of security zone, so to speak, for women, so that they can live and thrive their regular life.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. Yeah, it is. The British Foreign and Commonwealth Office is paying to have it translated into Lingala and Swahili, and is actually buying time on Congolese television because they see a sort of a lack of debate within the country about what is going on. And of course, you know, Kinshasa in the West, they speak Lingala. You know, the East, a different language. It's like two different countries. and Kabila's wife has been to Panzi Hospital, wrings her hands, cries, and nothing happens. And you know, you can ask the FARDC to be responsible, to have, you know, to have secure zones for the women, but I think it's going to take the opprobrium of the international community on this country to make something get off you know, the start, because he's made no effort. In Panzi Hospital? No, not the government at all. In fact, when I was there in May, the government of Bukavu had shut off Panzi's water supply because of all of the 4x4s with NGO logos that were going through the gates. They were convinced that they were all bringing buckets of money and leaving behind. So for 6 weeks, Panzi Hospital had no water. And I actually filmed those fistula operations, and beforehand, Mukwege was washing his hands with a pitcher of water and asked me please not to film it. Mm. And Christine Shuler de Screever, the activist in the film, actually confronted the Minister of the Interior and said, you have the blood of enough Congolese women on your hands. Do you want them to start dying now of cholera? And while I was there, the water was turned back on. But do you remember that, Bernard?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Of course.
So, anyway.
Yes. My name is Agnes. I'm from Congo. I went with Lisa for the translation. My English is not very good, and I would like my daughter to translate for me.
Okay, if we can do just maybe two sentences at a time, because that's not a very easy exercise, so we'll do
slowly.
Two or three years ago, she attended a session at the UN for women. She was basically going around, running around to let people know about the condition of women in the Congo.
Les gens ne pouvaient pas comprendre.
People could not understand.
Deux ans après, avec le travail de Human Rights,
2 years. 2 years later, with 2 years later, with the work of Human Rights,
Watch. International Rescue Committee,
with International Rescue Committee, that were there and investigated. Then there were reports, and that's how the Americans discovered what was going on in the Congo. I'm sorry, I'm still moved, but what's going on there, you've seen by yourself. We're asking ourselves, MONUC was there for years. How come they did not act?
Do you want
to speak? Et pourquoi la communauté internationale qui connaît cette situation, croyez-moi, believe me, tous les pays, tous les grands de tous les pays de la communauté internationale connaissent cette situation.
How come all these countries, the international community who knew about it, did not do anything about it? Every country in the international community is involved in the lootings and the plundering of the natural resources in the Congo. Pardon, tout le monde?
They're complicit.
They help each other in this matter so that they can continue looting and plundering the resources in the Congo.
Je vous assure, je vais donner mon adresse, mon téléphone. Ceux qui veulent avoir des preuves de ce que j'ai dit peuvent me contacter. Je vais donner.
I assure you, I can give you my phone number, my contact. You can call me and I will give you the proofs that all this is the truth. Starting with the Bush family, they're all involved in the looterings and plunderings in the Congo. You've seen on the map the size of the Congo and the size of Rwanda, which is a much smaller country. How come they can invade and control the Congo and cause so much trouble? Behind Rwanda, you should see the Western Hemisphere hand taking things under control and acting through Rwanda.
Dans la situation du Congo, il y a trop de mensonges. Trop de mensonges. La désinformation.
There is way too many lies and misinformation about the situation there.
Tout le monde sait que c'est le Rwanda qui est responsable de ce qui arrive au Congo. Mais le Rwanda est soutenu par ces multinationales.
Everybody thinks that Rwanda is responsible for what's going on there, but they actually are backed up by the Western countries. There are 483 ethnic groups in the Congo. There are nine neighboring countries. There are a lot of ethnic groups that are across the borders, both in the Congo and the bordering countries. There have never been any problem before with any other neighboring country. But to neutralize the Congo, they want people to believe that the Congolese are trying to pretty much attack the other ethnic groups bordering the other countries.
Thank you.
Again, those who want to get some information, I am available to provide them to you.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask if other people have questions, could go to the microphone so everyone could hear you. I think Marie wanted to make a point.
Okay. Je voudrais réagir par rapport à ce que ma soeur vient de dire. Effectivement, la MONUC, quand j'ai vu dans le film, on a passé l'élément sur la MONUC, ça m'a étonné.
I would like to react based on what this lady just said, and I was a little bit surprised about what we said about MONUC.
Parce qu'au fait, comme le film présente le viol des femmes en RDC, il avait fallu aussi profiter pour relever les viols de femmes par les agents de la MONUC.
The way MONUC was presented in the movie, I think it was important as well to show the involvement of MONUC in the raping, in the rape.
Donc des gens qui sont venus soi-disant aider les Congolais à trouver la paix, donc la mission des Nations Unies au Congo, ils ont profité des salaires qu'ils avaient parce qu'ils circulaient les dollars et ils ont profité de la pauvreté de la population féminine, surtout congolaise, pour violer aussi les femmes congolaises.
MONUC, who was there on the field, took advantage of the situation and control to also rape women there in the same region.
Il y a eu des cas qui ont été confirmés et ces gens ont été renvoyés de la mission de la MONUC, mais jusqu'à aujourd'hui, on ne sait même pas s'il y a eu procès dans leur pays respectif.
A few cases have been confirmed being accurate of rapes, and these people were actually fired and convicted.
Et surtout par rapport à ce qu'elle a dit, effectivement, il y a des rapports. Même si vous dites que vous allez donner les coordonnées, il y a des rapports des Nations Unies sur les pillages des ressources naturelles, la RDC, qui ont dit clairement que la guerre a été utilisée pour continuer à exploiter les ressources naturelles à la RDC. On a cité nommément les pays que ma sœur vient de relever ici.
There's a report that came out that proved the case that MONUC was actually involved in the rapes and the plundering.
Oui, le pillage de ressources.
In looting.
Pas MONUC. Les pays qui ont pillé les ressources naturelles, la RDC, mm-hmm. Les pays qui ont armé les rebelles d'abord, Et ensuite, on a vu les troupes rwandaises, ougandaises se battre sur le sol congolais. Et on a dit clairement, on a cité le Rwanda, l'Ouganda, Burundi et aussi les États-Unis, la Grande-Bretagne, comme les pays avec les multinationales qui sont à la base des pillages de ressources.
Okay, the neighboring countries, again, with, even with the United States, this report proved that they were also responsible of plundering the natural resources. I'm doing my best, it's kind of hard here.
C'est pour cela que nous disions, il faudrait que... qu'on puisse, que la situation soit claire, qu'on dise aux Congolais que nous voulons vous aider, il ne faudrait pas dire qu'on vient vous aider, mais on continue à armer les gens pour qu'ils continuent à faire la guerre et les femmes seront toujours violées.
That's why the situation should be made clear when the Western countries say that we're here to help you. They should indeed help the people instead of continuing to finance the people who are responsible of all these atrocities and plundering the resources.
Thank you, Marie. I'd like to follow up on this theme of justice and accountability. And I know, Lisa, you're very involved in raising the issue in the international context with respect to the International Criminal Tribunal, as well as having raised it in the context of the DRC. Could you talk a little bit about various avenues through which you think some efforts could be made to address the issues of justice?
Well, we're just beginning that aspect of the outreach. I mean, to show it in the Parliament and to talk about the impunity issue, we're showing it at the European Commission next week and hope to take it to show it to major players in The Hague. But the other issue about the resource war, I think, is also important, and it came up in the congressional testimony. I don't know if anybody knows that there was an actual hearing, the first ever congressional hearing concerning sexual violence and conflict on Tuesday. And the resource thing came up several times. And I think they sort of go, you know, they're sort of a piece. A lot of people ask me why isn't the Congo on the front pages? Why do people know so little about this war? And people are very confused about what is actually at the root of the war. And I hope that that's one message that the film makes a little bit clearer, that it is really a resource war, that it's not an internecine, tribal, ethnic thing. It really is about the plundering of Eastern Congo's resources, particularly the resources like coltan, cassiterite, and tin that we all have in our cell phones, our laptop computers, our Sony PlayStations, our Blackberries, our remote controls. So the complicity of the West in what is continuing in Eastern Congo, I wonder if that is not part of the smokescreen that's helped sort of obscure and keep this on the back pages. And in as far as the impunity thing, I just know that, yes, there have been MONUC peacekeepers who have been sent back to their host countries. They rarely face any retribution when they go back to South Africa or to Paraguay or to Bangladesh. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know of any of them that have actually served jail time or, you know, gone beyond taking a big pay cut for, you know, having brothels with 13-year-olds or, you know, trading bags of sorghum for blowjobs. I mean, it just goes on and on. But the impunity thing is humongously important, and that these guys, you know, who Bernard found with, it took a little bit of effort, but not too much. The rapists, that they would go on camera and stand in front of my cameras and confess to these just unspeakable crimes and then melt into the bush. The single most chilling moment in my years of filmmaking, that, you know, I had to think to myself, who are the next victims, and the victims after that, and the victims after that. We're considering sort of fuzzing their faces for the Congo broadcast so that they become a little more everyman. But that footage should be laid at the foot of Kabila's military commanders, who know that this is going on. Mm-hmm. I'd like to have Bernard's comments on some of this, particularly about the MONUC. And
as we are talking about impunity, I think that it will be really difficult to make some justice for those women, raped women. Why? Because our authorities now, the people who are leading Congo by now, were rebels some time ago. So they can't accept a sort of justice against rapists. This is the first. And the second, the people who are raping women in our villages are Interahamwe from Rwanda, from Burundi, from Uganda. they will never be judged, because they will go back into their country, mm-hmm. countries. And then, please ask yourself, more of these people are not known by the women. They have raped. So it is really very difficult. And for the UN staff who had raped,
yeah.
I can't say really it's a big number of UN staff who did it. It was a shame for everybody. Even I'm a UN staff too. But really, they took strong decision against those people. But they will never be judged in our country. They say, okay, they'll be judged in their countries. But what impact can it give to on those raped women? Because what I was asking was that those people could be judged in the country, so that women, the raped women, can see, okay, our rapers have been judged. So even if they don't receive anything, but it can help them saying, okay, I've been raped, but that man was judged, was punished. So we don't think this will happen one day. So this is the problem of impunity. Something I wanted to add after what she had said and what she had said. I've been in Rwanda during the genocide, and my wife was killed just in front of me and my kids. And then I crossed the border to face the reality of raped women in my country. I'm working for the United Nations in Congo, but I think I will die with all my secrets in me, because if I try to say what I know tomorrow I'll be killed. You know, mm-hmm. You can talk freely. You're outside the country, she can't talk. But if I say something wrong here, and tomorrow I go back in my country, I'll be killed. So you understand.
Yeah, the issue of reprisals is huge. And the raped women, I mean, yes, men can be put on trial, but first the women have to come forward, and the women have to be assured of security and of social services, and you know, those things are just not in place to motivate women to come forward and accuse. Anyway,
could you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, Mavi Cabrera Baleza from the International Women's Tribune Center. We work a lot in East and West Africa, in countries like Liberia, Sierra Leone, Uganda, in our advocacy for the full implementation of Security Council Resolution 1325 on women, peace, and security. And it's great to see in the film the local organizing among the rape survivors themselves. But my question is for Bernard. In most of our conversations with women in communities, in conflict-affected communities, with women and men, and you come across remarks where they say, oh, men are killed in battle, and women are only raped. So, like, what's the major issue? So it's a welcome surprise to see men like Bernard engaged actively in combating violence against women in conflict situations. And we ourselves are working with some groups engaging men in our advocacy. Are there efforts in the DRC to organize men in this advocacy or in combating violence against women?
Thank you for the question. But I think in the movie, you can't see men really fighting for the raped women. But in reality, in our country, there are a lot of men who are concerned by this problem, and men are fighting. Really, I know about, there are some local organizations, associations of men and women fighting for raped women case. It's not only, for myself, what happened to me? As I told you, I've been living in Rwanda for 14 years, and then came the genocide of Rwanda. My wife was Tutsi; she was killed in Rwanda. Okay, it was. How can I say it? It was clean. They shoot her, one bullet in the head and one in the heart. So it was just right finished. But when I came back home, I saw those raped women. Can you imagine in the movie you saw there is a woman who is bleeding since 3 years, and she has no money to go to pay for a transportation to Bukavu where she can be taken in care. Can you imagine? When I saw that, I said, God, my wife was killed. It was clean, right? And you see, but these women are suffering, are going to suffer for many, many years, and there is no solution. Just they are rotting, waiting to die. Can you imagine? I said, okay, God, what can I do? And this is why I told you, when I met Lisa, she was going to Panzi Hospital only, and Santro Lame maybe. And I said, please, come, I want to show you something. And I took her to Bunyakiri, you see. But I couldn't imagine one day the problem would be now. I'm really surprised to see you, all of you here. How can I say it? But thank you, Lisa. Because I couldn't imagine that people could be interested by the case of raped women. Anyway, continue.
Maybe I should just add, please.
What you have to understand in regards to rapes in the Congo? It didn't happen by chance. It has been premeditated. Rapes of Congolese women is aimed at destroying Congolese society. Rapes in the Congo is to humiliate men, so that men can no longer resist to the occupier. This is the purpose of rapes in the Congo, to exterminate this population there and humiliating them.
Thank you. I wanted to respond to the earlier question. Christine Karumba, who's with Women for Women International, whom you saw in the documentary, has a project going on in the DRC, which actually OSI, or the International Women's Program, has funded, and they have a men's leadership workshop, and they're very much involved in training men to be leaders on issues dealing with violence against women.
Hi, my name is Sal Huang, and I'm with National Development Research Institutes and Columbia University. And I have a comment and then a question, which is, just listening to this discourse, there's a lot of talk about violence against women, but I also want to point out that it's also violence against children, and that's on a different level than adult females, women. That there's girls, and from what I understand, a lot of boy soldiers are highly traumatized and often have been raped themselves, and become rapists. So I just kind of wanted to bring that up. But also, I have a question to any of the panelists. That I saw a really interesting film called Lumo this past summer, and I was wondering if there was any cross conversations with the filmmakers of that film. And I've heard that Eve Ensler has been in the DRC, so I was just wondering, if there's been any contact.
I saw an early cut of Lumo, and Nelson and the other filmmakers were really helpful in helping me put together my equipment package and giving me tips. They were mostly in Goma at Doc's Hospital, and that was a very, that was sort of their venue. And I was with Eve when she went in May, and she started, next year will be the Year of the Women of Congo, and she's a ferocious fundraiser and agitator, so, bring it on. So,
do you think that there will be more, with her involvement, there'll be a lot more attention than, brought to this issue?
Well, she's been concentrating mostly on fundraising for Panzi Hospital and building transitional housing near Panzi for the women who often have to spend 2 or 3 years there, and so that's been her concentration. Bring it on. I mean, like I said, the more people who are talking about this, the better, and her voice is a loud one and a welcome one in the conversation.
Okay, thanks.
I think you can hear me speak.
It's being recorded, so we're trying to... Thank you.
I'm Meredith Tershin from Rutgers University. I wanted to point out that this is not merely rape, that the doctor in the film spoke so clearly about the mutilation of women and their humiliation. This goes way beyond rape. And so the question really is, it's not just that the men are killed and the women are raped. The men are killed and the women say they have died also because of the mutilation and the humiliation. And the question is, what can be done on the level not of women being raped, not considering it a case of rape, but a case of brutal attack, of a violence which goes way beyond what you experienced, which was horrible, these women are experiencing on a level of physical assault which goes way beyond just what we imagine as a rape. What we hear when we hear the word rape, we don't hear the level of violence that is shown in the film.
Yeah, and that was a hard thing in the film, to figure out how... You know, how graphic to become. The stories that I heard, the woman who was the sex slave who stands up and speaks for the others and talks about the cannibalism and the unbelievable degradation and humiliation and horror. I heard that story too many times, and how many times can you put it in the film? I mean, she spoke for tens of thousands of women, and yeah, it does go beyond rape. It's true.
Thanks. I'm Sam Cook from the Peace Women Project of Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I have a question which is around the stories that you hear and going in to get stories. And one of the things that we work on here is trying to get the Security Council at the UN to actually ask for more information about what's happening and for them to respond to it. And this whole thing of information gathering is about getting women's stories. And I wonder if any of you could talk a little bit about... I suppose some of it's about the ethics of getting stories and about expectations. And I've spoken to Congolese women before who said, you know what, you can talk about reporting, but we go and we talk to women and they say, what do we need to tell the story again for and go through the trauma of it if nothing happens? And you can, you know, you can tell us it'll go in a report or it'll go in a film or it'll go somewhere, but we don't see anything happening. So I wonder if you've got any reflections on that and ways that we can maybe talk about getting information in ways that respect the woman and in ways that we can also talk about if you're going to get a story, where are the services? If you're going to ask for data for a report, you know, where's the psychosocial support? All of those things. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, I can only speak to the women who I spoke with, and, you know, they knew they were going to be in a film. Most of them signed releases. They gave video releases. I asked them to share a nightmare, so I figured I needed to do something equivalent. I will say that I got a grant from Amnesty last year to make a 15-minute version of this film, all in Swahili, that I showed at Panzi Hospital last May. And to watch the raped women watching themselves on a video monitor was unbelievable. In fact, there's a clip on the HBO website. Can I please plug HBO for a second here? They have been awesome throughout this whole process, and it's going to be on HBO next week on Tuesday. But they have an amazing website with the clip from the women watching themselves on the screen. And some women don't want to talk. Some women would stand stand for hours waiting to talk to me until it got dark, until I could no longer film, because they wanted to talk to somebody who wasn't a note taker, who would listen to them without judgment and would just let them describe what had happened, because they will talk amongst themselves, but to have someone come from the outside. And I obviously have a huge responsibility to these women. To each of them, I told them that I would do the best I could to make sure that their stories were taken to a world who seems basically indifferent to what's happening to them.
And I put, you know, two or three of those statements in the film, but that happened over and over and over again. Please tell the world. So, you know, about the social services, about Bernardo and I have a good friend, and Anne McComey in the back, who actually, I want to acknowledge Anne, who worked with Onorine in the film and was a great resource for me, who did the investigation into the predatory peacekeepers for Swing, and came up with a stunning report that nobody read. But one of the huge problems that she faced was finding women who would come forward to accuse. And it was like, you know, it was rape crisis counseling 101. There were no services. There was no incentive. There was no, you know, child care. There was nobody to explain the judicial process. There was nobody to assure that they would be secure after testifying. None of that was in place. In fact, when Onorine comes next week, I'm trying to get her a tour of the Special Victims Unit in the New York Police Department, because they are a model for the rest of the country in terms of social services and the incredible nexus of resources that they have around every woman that comes forward. So there's so much that needs to be in place before, for instance, the issues of criminal justice can be addressed. I mean, there are jails in Bukavu that don't have locks, you know, where the prisoners are let out at noon to go forage for lunch because there's no cafeteria. So. Exactly. Yeah, and the untold women who, you know, are raped go down to the river, wash themselves off, come home, hope that nobody notices. So for women even to, you know, come forward and say that they have been raped is a pretty big deal.
Je voudrais dire quelque chose là-dessus. Parce que normalement, par rapport aux violences sexuelles, il y a quand même des principes directeurs et il y a le principe de la confidentialité qui était respecté depuis longtemps et les femmes n'arrivaient pas à parler.
There's a principle and ethic of confidentiality as far as reporting about rapes.
Il y a aussi le problème de la sécurité de la victime, surtout si l'auteur donc est une personne qui a une responsabilité au niveau de l'armée, la personne pourrait retourner vers la victime.
There is also a danger in regards to the victim, because if the person testify, then the person who's guilty can come back and, you know, recommit the same accusation.
Mais depuis 2003, quand il y a eu une mission de terrain, on a fait une mission dans toute la province, les victimes elles-mêmes, quand elles ont appris qu'il y a des gens qui veulent travailler pour leur assistance, elles ont commencé à venir vraiment nombreuses et elles parlaient, elles n'avaient plus honte de personne.
When the victims were reassured that they will have protection, then they started coming forward and speak.
Je pense que c'est comme ça qu'elles acceptent même qu'on puisse les interviewer, faire des vidéos pour qu'on puisse continuer à faire la sensibilisation.
I think that's how they feel more confident in coming forward and giving all the information, because they know they have protection.
Hi. My name is My name is Krista Bosch, and I want to thank you first for making this film, because it's just such an important issue. Sexual violence and armed conflict is something that I had researched all throughout law school, and my main issue is this issue of impunity and how sexual violence and armed conflict is prosecuted. The ICC is quite limited in what they can do in the situation in the Congo, because they're really only going to prosecute the highest level officials. And I'm curious to hear what efforts are being made, if any, in the domestic legal system. I mean, I know the legal system in the Congo is in disarray to some extent, and I don't know if it has been taken seriously by anyone, if there are any efforts happening. What's going on?
I really can't speak to that. I mean, I wasn't aware during the time that I spent there of actual prosecutions. McComey, do you know anything about actual prosecutions or?
Yeah. There was a rape case in Sogomboyo where some military had raped almost 100 women. That was in the West, and actually Monuc Human Rights really led the appeal for that prosecution. there were around 40 who were prosecuted,
yes.
But apparently they escaped because the prison did not have doors. So it's all, it's true, some of them. So it's a question of a lot of reform. I mean, when we talk about impunity, I think we need to look at different levels. I mean, it's not just about shifting blame, but trying to identify what needs to change. And she mentioned the sexual violence law that was passed, which clearly is not very implementable. I was in the East, and the context, some of the things there were not realistic. But it's also about the will, the government will to engage. And I think Bernard raised a very important question. How do those who were perpetrators of yesterday accept that we now have this kind of openness and a look and a reflection in the past, which might implicate their own complicity or their actions, their own crimes? So these are very delicate issues, but looking forward, legal reform and actually comprehensive legal reform and building systems that work is critical, because there's no need to prosecute people and have this show where you have either the international community saying, yes, prosecute, 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 and then you have people in jail and then they leave because escaped, you know, under those kinds of pretexts. So comprehensive legal reform, looking into the future, is key to fighting impunity. So,
yeah. I'd like to ask a question from you, Anne, because of the fact that you have not only a good sense of the situation on the ground in the DRC, but you also have a sense of how MONUC operates.
Yes.
So one of the problems that we came across, we talked to a number of prosecutors, military and civilian, we talked to the justice minister, etc. There seems to be at that level a complete acknowledgement of the problems and a stated commitment to addressing it. Mm. However, clearly nothing is being done domestically, and a lot of the various actors we spoke to point to the MONUC, and they expect MONUC to deliver justice. So I guess my question is really, what is the domestic capacity for delivering justice? You have incredible men and women, jurists, lawyers, mm. engaged, very familiar. It's not a country without a formal judicial system. Mm. What kind of support does it need for itself to get the A to Z of judicial reform going?
I think that's a good question. There is a system that is coming back. I wouldn't say it's a functioning legal system, because in April 2000, for example, I'll just give an example. In April 2006, it was, we did a sort of study with the human rights component of the number of cases that were being, first we looked at the global number of cases that was being reported, and we had like 14,000 rape cases, of which 13% were children, so it was interesting that someone flagged that. Mm-hmm. And out of those, only 1% were being brought to the court system. And of that 1%, less than 1% of that 1% was actually going through the system to the end. This question of payment, this question of a lot of corruption within the system, as Lisa said, jails without locks. But I think that there's something about the political will.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more like, okay, you want us to prosecute, you know, so we will prosecute. And so, you know, okay, you want a case, here is a case. But that's not enough. So there's that will, and then there's that, you know, then acting on it, upon it, you know, creating systems that work. Assistance to women. You're saying to women, report your case within 3 months. These women are in remote locations. There is no assistance for them to even come to the hospital, leave alone pursue a legal case that takes, like, I don't know how many years. So there's this whole thing, like, you need to have a system where the survivors are assisted to have access to justice. So you could have the best laws, but they don't have access to justice. Mm-hmm. And then this legal system is such that even the most willing of the prosecutors do not get support from the institution. They are there from the government. They are there, but I have seen it. We had so many cases where we pushed, and then a month later, the people just walked free because they said they had escaped. So the system has huge loopholes, which are linked, I believe, mm-hmm. to the political will and the seriousness with which the government is taking the issue. But another question that I need to talk about on impunity also, which I think some people in the audience are alluding to, is the question of security and the insecurity in the East with the foreign armed groups on the territory. And in our study in April, 60% of the sexual violence cases were being perpetrated by these people. At the same time, we have a repatriation program for them. There's no accountability system in place. And recently, the Security Council passed a resolution for the foreign armed groups to lay down their weapons and go back. But the question of justice is critical. And I don't believe that the perpetrators are not known. There's a lot of research on people who have acted. I think to demand justice, we need to demand for a commitment, and that is lacking, I think, both at the political level for those reasons, historical reasons, and also because the pressure is being placed sometimes on assisting the survivors, giving them food, but not looking at other critical blocks that have to be put in place. Mm-hmm. I hope I haven't talked too much.
That's terrific.
Can I
you.
Say something?
Yes, please. Sir, there's a line.
At the beginning, I told you I'm afraid to say what I know because I can lose my job and even my life. But I found myself in the middle of the problem without wanting it, you know. But what I can tell you straight right now is that all this story is surrounded by lies, even the genocide of Rwanda, you see. I have witnessed the genocide of Rwanda. I've witnessed what Interahamwe and other armed groups are doing in my country. I've witnessed how they are stealing minerals in my country. I have a lot of proofs. I have a lot of things to do because I found myself just on the field discovering everything, coming on my head like this. And that's why you're asking how did it happen that it's you who stood up and start fighting for women. It's because of that. But please, I have a lot of things to tell you. A lot of things to tell you. But I can't. What I can ask you, if there's an author here, because before dying, I want the world to know the truth. Yeah, if I'm not a good writer, but if I can find an author with whom I can work, and I can talk to him and tell him everything, I think that you'll never have any question to ask anymore. You will understand straight what is going on, what's happened, and you have all the answers to the question you have here. Please.
Yes.
Thank you, Bernard and Lisa. My name is Janie Simmons. I'm an ethnographer, and currently I work in Harlem in the South Bronx with drug addicted women and their partners, and I hear many stories about rape, and they found heroin. It isn't something I would recommend, but it did help them for a certain period. And I don't think we can underestimate the value of allowing people to tell their story. And you have done that, and I hope that all of us working together can create the conditions for Bernard to tell his story, because I do think we get stuck on the questions of why do these men do that, and why do the husbands leave, when the bigger question is why do we allow the Congo to be raped, and what is our complicity in this, the West, the U.S., neighboring countries, the wealthy, and those are I can't imagine that justice or that any of this can stop unless we answer those questions and really do something about it. And this isn't my field, but I'm here because I just feel it's incredibly important that we understand this. I mean, I work in AIDS, and this is all, of course, very related. And the more and more we learn about women, poverty, and AIDS, the more we learn we have to learn about everything, because it's all related. And and I can only, I can't imagine that Bernard won't find, he found terrific filmmaker and more films and more authors, and I think the story can get out, but how to make these stories move us to understand the problem and intervene in a way. I think this country is beginning to feel some new hope, that we can be maybe part of the solution instead of part of the problem. I hope that we manage to do that in January this coming year, and maybe you know, all of us won't feel as powerless as we feel right now. But thank you so much. I can't tell you how much we are moved, and we hear you, and we want to do something.
Hi, my name is Mark Marge. I work for an organization called the International Action Network on Small Arms. And we're a global network of 700 organizations in about 100 countries that work on gun violence. Many of our members are actually in DRC. And what we hear from them time and time again, and most of them are women actually, is that guns allow these atrocities to occur. And I just want to ask any of the panelists if they know what is being done to reduce the flow of weapons to Congo, other than UN arms embargoes, which are clearly broken again and again.
Can I just add to that, if you have any sense of where the flow of arms is coming from? Is it from Rwanda? Is it from Uganda? Or is it from Western countries?
Can you answer the question?
No, I can't.
I avoid,
you know,
if
I'm sure
of my security. You understand? Can mm-hmm. you understand? I can answer.
Okay, please. J'aimerais dire quelque chose hein, par rapport à ça, parce qu'il y a quand même l'engagement de la communauté internationale pour aider la RDC à mettre fin à la guerre.
There's a commitment sort of the international community to help the Congo to put the war to end the war.
C'est ce que j'avais dit, mais et cet engagement s'est fait souvent par la prise en charge des conférences, réunir les gens, les Congolais entre eux, deux fois les Congolais avec d'autres pays voisins.
This is done through seminars and conferences by pretty much gathering Congolese and other communities as well to talk this over.
Non, je voulais parler là de la conférence récente de Goma. Je pense que vous étiez informé, et aussi de la conférence de la région des Grands Lacs.
I would like to talk about the conference that took place in Goma and the conference that took place about the region of the Great Lakes.
Ce que nous déplorons, il y a des engagements, il y a des accords, il y a des rebelles, les États qui signent des accords pour dire que nous voulons la paix, non seulement en RDC, mais aussi dans nos pays voisins, mais pour l'appliquer, c'est tout un problème.
There are treaties about ceasefires, stopping the war, a lot of things like that, but there's no implementation.
Et il y a le problème l'embargo sur les armes qui pèse sur la RDC. Mais nous voyons il y a des armes qui circulent en RDC. Mais pourquoi on ne contrôle pas tout ça et on n'arrête pas tout ça?
There's a treaty that prevents weapons to flow in to the Congo, but nothing is done to pretty much stop it.
C'est comme ça qu'à un moment donné, la population congolaise est en train de se dire que la communauté internationale est l'ennemi du peuple congolais.
That's how the Congolese community started thinking that maybe the international community is accomplice in this act.
Et je pense que vous avez suivi le 30 juin 2006, normalement, on devrait mettre fin, 2005, on devrait mettre fin à la transition. Et la population a manifesté, ils sont allés casser les matériels de la MONUC pour dire que la MONUC est là, ne faisait rien pour nous.
On the 30th of June 2005, they were supposed to stop the flow of the weapons in the Congo, and the Congolese community started protests.
Donc c'est pour dire qu'il y a des initiatives, mais on ne sent pas vraiment la volonté de mettre fin à tout ça. Si on se mettait à appliquer l'accord, donc il y a le pacte de non-agression qui a été signé par les différents pays de la région des Grands Lacs et aussi les accords de la conférence de Goma, je pense qu'on arriverait quand même à mettre fin à tout ça.
There are peace treaties that have been signed to stop the war with the Congo and the neighboring countries, but as long as there's no implementation, there's nothing that we can do to stop it.
Hi, my name is Joseph Mbangu, and I am a jurist by formation from the Congo. And I left the Congo right in 1998, actually. And that was a couple of years after the first war began in Bukavu. So right now, I did a couple of works with Lisa on this movie, some translation into Swahili and Lingala. And my intervention is mostly on two points. I want to talk about impunity and the judicial system in the Congo. And before asking a question, looking at most American, most African economies, most African budgets, they are based on foreign aid. It has been quite some time since the Congolese government hasn't received any significant aid from foreign powers. Not that I want to justify the Congolese government, but I just want to make a point, because looking at the government that doesn't have any money to support its judicial system, you could just imagine that most of the magistrates, most of the judges, they live by corruption. You don't have money, you don't get no justice. You come to court, you got to show money. That's pretty much how the system works. So my point over there, and that I share with my friends, is instead of pointing fingers at the Congolese government, we should find ways to help the Congolese government. Because if they don't get money, they can help the people who really need the help. We really need the justice to be served. The other point is, most people have talked about it, is I was in Bukavu, a student at the law school at Catholic University of Bukavu in 1994. Working out of a nap, I saw that the city was overwhelmed. Bukavu welcomed the country, pretty much. Not only Bukavu, but also Goma. We received more than 2 million people in one day. And that problem has been ongoing up to this point, as the international community taking its responsibility of delivering for Rwanda. We've said, okay, never again what happened in Rwanda is going to happen. But we're now living just the consequences of the genocide that occurred in Rwanda. We're just giving sporadic solutions, just things to, like, patches, but we're not solving the problem. What's going on in Bukavu right now is just the consequences of what happened in Rwanda. Those people who fled the war in the country, they're in the Congo, like, you know, making their own rules, living in their own ways. They get killed when they want, no one will catch them. And Monique is there, but Monique is not willing to go in remote areas. They are living... I don't want to say it. But it's just so painful. When I got here to New York, like 7 months ago, I met Lisa through a friend. I showed her a movie, and I told her, I'm going to help you. I will do some of the translations. Why? Because what I saw was just so poignant, touched me so much, that I felt that this movie is going to do something. And my question to this audience is, you've watched this movie. What do you really think that you could do to bring about change? Because many people are going to watch this movie after this night. They're going to talk about it, and it's just going to dwindle in the universe. It's just going to disappear, maybe. If we don't do something, nothing is going to happen. And the other thing is, I think we are at the point where the Congo needs some sort of plan Marshall. The help need to be really of a very need to be very significant. To come up to my question now, do you think that at this point, every general conference, every general meeting with Rwanda, Burundi, Uganda, and all those countries neighboring the Congo, do you think that every general meeting, maybe under the supervision of the UN or the African Union, do you think it's going to make a difference? And to Lisa, this is just a personal question. Lisa, what do you think, what's the impact of your movie in 5 years from now? Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to propose that since we're coming to the end of this this event, that we give an opportunity to each of our speakers to both address the question but also to actually give us a final statement, whatever they would like to say. I'd just like to in response to the gentleman, mention that the Congo is one of the resource-richest countries in the world. I am sure that if the government has the political will, they can find the resources to address the issues of justice for women. Okay. So should we begin from you, Lisa, and move this way?
Joseph, where are you? You asked the $64,000 question. What will the impact be in 5 years? I don't know, but I know that after every single screening, people come forward, ask what they can do, ask for copies, want to have screenings on their campus, want to have screenings for the women's groups, want to have screenings going forward. It'll have an international television presence. I want to show it in Uganda and in Burundi and to, you know, to players in all of those different governments. I hope in 5 years that it will be a quaint little memory of the horrors that had existed 5 years before. I hope that in 5 years this film is completely irrelevant. So that's my hope. But the issue of the resource wars and what each of us can do. Somebody had an idea at Sundance that after seeing the film, people should send a text message to the manufacturers of their cell phones to ask if there was blood coltan on their cell phones. And I keep putting it out there at every screening that someday a wonk hand is going to go up in the back of the room and say, I know how to write the software for something like that. We can make that happen. And those sort of things will happen on a grassroots level, mm-hmm. of individual people. You know, seeing this film. HBO is sponsoring watch parties. I mean, there are going to be hundreds of thousands of people watching this film next Tuesday. And we're having a screening on Wednesday with a live chat. I mean, it's not happening in a vacuum. It's happening with resource pages, with where you can go to find out more, where you can go to give money, where you can go to plan further parties. Women Make Movies, of course, is distributing it. I mean, it's not just, you know, what you say about it showing and dwindling into the universe, that's every filmmaker who makes an advocacy film's worst nightmare. But I feel incredibly backed up by HBO, by OSI, by Women Make Movies, and by the IRC, by Women for Women. I mean, they're by Friends of the Congo. Maurice is here somewhere. I mean, every person, you know, every screening, somebody comes forward and says, we're going to use this film to put a face on it. So I hope that's what happens.
Can I just ask, just follow up?
I'm sorry, we're really trying to wind up. Perhaps afterwards you can come up. Thank you very much.
What I can say is that all this story, all the sufferings we are witnessing in Congo is about minerals. Mm. Even the genocide of Rwanda, mm. minerals in Congo. See, what is happening in my country? Minerals, you see. What I can ask you is to tell those people who are coming to look for minerals, tell them, please, you can take minerals without killing people, without raping women. Because even if you take all the minerals we have our soil, which is very rich. We are going to survive with what we are farming. But please, it is enough. Okay. It is enough. Tell them, because we don't benefit anything from those minerals, and we don't know how to exploit them. Mm-hmm. Please, they are able to do it. They can come, take all the minerals they want, but please stop the war. This is, if you can, please tell them this message. Thank you.
Oui, je vais aller dans le même sens pour dire effectivement ce qu'il vient de dire, parce qu'on ne comprend pas pourquoi on continue à tuer les gens à cause de ressources naturelles.
I will join him in what he just said, because a lot of people seem not to understand why all these killings are happening is due to the minerals.
C'est comme ça que moi je profiterai pour interpeller surtout notre gouvernement, parce qu'il y a un mécanisme maintenant pour revisiter les contrats miniers en RDC.
I would like to question our government in the Congo, because our contracts that regulates how to exploit the natural resources in the Congo.
Comme on avait eu à le dire, les gens qui dirigent maintenant ont eu une manière ou d'une autre participé à la signature de ces contrats miniers parce qu'ils étaient dans des groupes rebelles aussi.
Say that again.
Comme on avait eu à le dire, les gens qui dirigent maintenant ont eu à, d'une manière ou d'une autre à participer à la signature de ces contrats miniers parce qu'ils étaient aussi rebelles.
The people who govern in the Congo today, they used to be also involved in plundering the natural resources themselves.
Il faudrait appliquer ces principes de transparence, que les ressources, les fonds qui entrent des ressources naturelles de la RDC puissent bénéficier à la population congolaise.
It is important that the exploitation of the natural resources in the Congo become transparent so that the people can benefit as well from the profit.
Et aussi, là je viens à la préoccupation de notre frère par rapport à, si je crois aux accords qu'il y a entre les pays voisins, je me dis dans ces accords, j'étais parmi les experts de la RDC qui ont travaillé sur le projet commun.
I was one of the experts who worked on the treaties between the Congo and the neighboring countries.
Nous avions travaillé sur des projets intéressants sur la bonne gouvernance, démocratie, les ressources naturelles, la lutte contre l'impunité et même par rapport aux transactions économiques.
We dealt with transparency, trade and all these economic relations between the Congo and the neighboring countries.
Si on se mettait à appliquer donc ces pactes de non-agression et là-dedans les protocoles qui traitent de toutes ces questions, qu'on puisse travailler ensemble comme de frères et sœurs de la même Afrique, je pense qu'on pourrait mettre fin à tout ce qui se passe dans notre pays.
If we implement those peace treaties and those trade treaties, and we can work as brothers and sisters and improve everybody's life.
Je vous remercie.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I'd like to thank our panelists. And I'd like to encourage all of you to look on the film's website, The Greatest Secret, because it really offers a lot of ideas about what you can do next. Thank you, Lisa, for inspiring us all.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
Watch HBO, 8 o'clock Eastern Time on Tuesday.